Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the podcast that follows the money behind our beautiful, beautiful, God how we miss it, game of football. I'm Kevin Day, and at a not very sociable remote distance, about 55 miles, is Kieran Maguire. Hello, Kieran.
Morning, Kevin.
It is morning, yes. In true Simpson style, it became afternoon just as you said that. That was quite good. I'm pleased about that. How is the Professor of Football Finance at Liverpool University this morning?
I'm very good. Leeds United's results came out this morning, so at 6 o'clock, I was up to my ears in it.
Kieran, before we start, I mean, football has got quite fractious this week, and it seems to me that football will be one of those industries that will be saying to the government very soon they may need to recalibrate the balance between protecting the vulnerable and not destroying the economy.
Yes, I think that's reflective not just on football, but on practically all of the entertainment industry. And that's what football is. It is professional entertainment. There are lots of clubs that are very vulnerable at present because they are in the lower leagues. They don't have sizable amounts of TV money or sponsorship money coming in. And then there are other clubs which are far more wealthy. So I think sort of the one-size-fits-all solutions which are being put forward by some people really are invalid and really haven't been thought through.
Now, Liverpool have made a U-turn on the furlough situation. I'm not surprised by the U-turn, but rather surprised by the fact they did it in the first place, because right from the start, Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp in particular has been associated as being one of those clubs that are doing the right thing. So did that come as a surprise to you when they announced the furlough for staff?
Not necessarily. They have had a couple of decisions which they've reversed historically. When they increased the capacity of Anfield recently from 45,000 to 54,000, one of the things that they did is that they made the prices in the new stand very prohibitive, very high indeed. And that upset, as you know, I work in Liverpool, that upset the local fans. Then the club reversed that. And I think what they've done here, that they've not thought things through. If they're going to, let's say they're going to furlough 300 people for 3 months, the cost to the exchequer for that is £2.25 million. Now, over the course of the last 5 years, Liverpool have made £270 million in profit. So it is a small amount. I think somehow the accountants have been let loose and they haven't considered the impact upon the fan base, who are very vocal and they do expect more from the club. And I think perhaps the club thought that they could get away with it. But to be fair, everybody I know connected with the club in terms of fan base, in terms of the commentators, has shot them down. And I think they were forced to do the U-turn. As much as anything else, the value of the Liverpool brand was going to fall far more in excess of the £2 million that they were saving in terms of wages.
Yeah, which is an issue we saw with Tottenham as well. But it's funny, because you would hope that the bigger clubs would take a lead in this, wouldn't they? The ones that really, really can afford it, you'd think would be saying to the public, look, we are one of the lucky few, as some big companies have done. Let's set an example and let's lead by that example.
Well, yes, and if you take a look at the announcement that came from Manchester United yesterday, they made it very clear that they don't want to use the furlough scheme. There's no intention in doing so. They're still committing to paying their match day staff, even though there's no matches. And United and Manchester City, I think you've got to give credit to both of the two big Manchester clubs, have dealt with this, A, correctly, but also from a public relations point of view, they appear to have led from the front, and you've got to give both of them credit.
West Ham leading from the front as well, to an extent. They're sort of looking ahead at future financial problems. One of the first Premier League teams to admit there might be financial problems for a club that size. But they've come up with a solution, haven't they, or a potential solution to any economic worries.
Yes, and again, yeah, we know that David Gold and David Sullivan do come in for a lot of stick from West Ham fans, you know, some of which is very justified. But in respect of the way that they're dealing with the pandemic, what they've said is we do expect to be short of money at some point. But what we're going to do instead is that we're going to have a share issue. We're going to put £30 million into the club in the form of shares. And on the back of that, we think that should be enough to see us over the summer.
Do you think that this will buy some time for football clubs now, like West Ham in particular, who, as you say, are always getting criticised by the fans at the moment? Well, certainly since the move to the new stadium. Is your instinct that fans will suddenly give them a year off or give them a season off and go, look, you know, in the circumstances, perhaps we should all, you know, wait a while before we start having a go at owners who are trying to do their best?
Well, I think West Ham fans should really give them a fair hearing on this. You know, there are pluses and minuses in respect of Gold and Sullivan. They do have some of the lowest season ticket prices in the Premier League. I appreciate you're watching the match from a much further distance than most fans, so perhaps you deserve a discount for that. But all the same, you know, I think it's around about £320, £340 for season tickets in the cheapest areas. So they could have perhaps charged more, and they chose not to do so.
Well, I think
the criticism.
Sorry, Kieran. I think it's hard, isn't it, when we're remote? It's so easy to interrupt you when I can actually see you and glare at you and tell you to stop speaking. But now, when we're so far away, also I think disgruntled West Ham fans will point out that the season tickets are cheap because they had a very big stadium to fill, essentially. And I think if they tried to charge what they would have wanted to charge, they would have struggled to sell seats in there. I mean, notwithstanding that their corporate facilities are amazing, they need to put bums on seats, and I think that's why the season tickets were so cheap. I don't think there was a huge degree of altruism involved in Gold and Sullivan's decision there.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, I thought it was part of the sell to the fans. Yeah, if we move from Upton Park, from the bowling ground, what we'll do on the back of that is that we'll make it very affordable for people. I agree with you entirely. They had to sell more tickets. There's still a waiting list, you know, for season tickets at West Ham. They have, well, I think, one of the highest numbers of season tickets in the Premier League. The capacity is 60,000. I think they've sold 54,000 season tickets, and there's still a waiting list on top of that. I think that the fans' beef is very much along the lines of it doesn't feel like home, it does feel like a bowl. And ultimately, the quality of the football has been a bit up and down. And as we both know, three wins on the bounce and everybody's a lot happier regardless of the team that you're supporting.
Yeah, and also I just realised what a hypocrite I've been, Kieran. Just literally seconds after I called for football fans to give their club owners at least a year's slack, I started criticising some club owners. But not my club, so that doesn't count. Now, before we get on to quite a serious discussion, the PFA and the Premier League, I want to pause for a little sorbet, Kieran. I think it's only fair that we've had two quite heavy courses. Before we go on to the very sweet dessert, let's talk about Kyle Walker and his what you could kindly call his flagrant flouting of self-distancing rules with two professional women. It's funny, but there will be a financial cost to Kyle Walker because I imagine the club will be taking sanctions against him, won't they?
Yes. I think he's probably feeling very foolish, and I suspect
£2,000 quid an hour. I'm not surprised he's feeling.
and one of them was a university student.
No, really?
Yeah, I presume she was some sort of business innovation course she's on, but fair play to her for charging him that amount. That counts towards your rent for certain. yeah, he's done something which is really dumb. I suspect that every footballer's WhatsApp group in the country for the Premier League has just gone, oh, Jesus Christ, Kyle. We're doing our best to win over hearts and minds.
Yeah.
And then you show this complete lack of common sense. Yeah, he will almost certainly get a 2-week fine from the club, and rightly so. I don't think that's going to be as bad as the abuse he's going to be getting next season.
Yeah,
you can imagine what opposing fans are going to do, and I don't think that City fans will be over impressed as well, because they were starting to take the moral high ground,
yeah,
in respect of the fact that City were, you know, City have been very generous in terms of their support for local food banks,
yeah,
in terms of committing to all of their staff and things of this nature. And then along he comes, and that fits into the stereotype,
yeah,
of what we are led to believe a footballer is. And I think you and I, we both met footballers, and you know, they're just your young men. You know, and we've done some daft things when we were that age, and they've done some daft things as well, but it doesn't make them bad people.
No, it's just a shame, because the news broke not long after our last podcast recording, when we spoke at length about how generous footballers are in terms of community schemes and charities, etc. And I suppose, to his credit, he could claim that he was helping the local economy in his own small way. But and the worst thing for Kyle Walker is that football fans have now got a lot of time on their hands to come up with the chance that he's going to get. Now, listen, on to a serious story. We talked at the start about how football, the cracks are starting to show. There's not been a united front this week. And the PFA and the Premier League are, I think, loggerheads is the kind way of putting it, isn't it?
Very much so. The Premier League owners between them are worth probably somewhere in the region of £80 billion.
Mm.
So what we have here.
Sorry,
is,
Kieran, you mean the owners themselves or the clubs are worth
the owners?
Money? The owners.
If you look at the wealth of the owners,
right?
Yeah,
okay.
You know, so incredible levels of wealth, but just like in football clubs, that's not evenly spread. So there are some clubs with owners who can quite easily put their hands in the pocket and pay the wages. If you take a look at Roman Abramovich at Chelsea, last year he lent the club £250 million.
Yeah.
Now, if he can afford to do that, then I think the player's point of view will be, well, why should we make a wage sacrifice on that basis? We're not. What ultimately are people trying to achieve here? If they just want to see footballers punished because there is this perception of footballers being overpaid, then that's just silly populism.
Yeah.
If we're trying to ensure that the NHS gets as much money as possible, well, why not pay the footballers the full wage? They will then pay 45% in tax. And then, of course, on top of that, they can also, and are doing so, in terms of making donations, showing their commitment to local charities, and just being good citizens. And I think lots of people are trying to do that in a variety of ways. The idea of trying to twist the players' arms behind their back to fulfil an agenda in respect of an industry which employs 500 people as far as the first team squads of Premier League clubs are concerned. Now, I don't see political focus applying for any other industry which employs so few people.
Mm.
So I just can't understand the logic behind this, apart from some people are envious of what some footballers earn.
Also, as well, the populism one is very interesting, because you don't see, and I'm going to use Ant and Dec as an example here, there's no popular outcry for very, very wealthy, you know, is Piers Morgan taking a pay cut? Are Ant and Dec taking a pay cut? Yeah, Jacob Rees-Mogg's investment company is telling its investors that this is a really useful opportunity. Where's the outcry about that? And it seems odd to me, and we've talked about this before, the image of footballers, and possibly they're suffering for some excess in the 80s and 90s, but it does seem to me that footballers, albeit very visible high earners, are the ones that are being picked on here rather than very, very many high-earning people. Richard Branson, for example, who laid all his staff off on 8 weeks without pay. Where's the headlines about that? It annoys me a little bit.
Yeah, it's easy pickings. And I appreciate that Matt Hancock was given effectively a tap in when he was being quizzed the other night.
Yeah.
Somebody brought up that question, and I think that was just poor journalism.
Yeah.
But what we have seen since then is that other politicians are joining in with the same comments. The vast majority of the cabinet own rented accommodation. Now, are they all taking is all the rent from that? Is that being given to good causes and things of that nature? It's very easy to focus on other people's income, especially if you think it's undeserved. I watched Toy Story 3 on the TV the other day. I didn't say I thought it was a good film, but I would have liked it a lot more had Tom Hanks not earned $40 million for doing the voiceover. It's the same with regards to football. All these people who are saying, I'm never going to watch the game again because they're overpaid. Well, we don't go to watch football due to the payments or non-payments to football. We go to it because we love football. And it's just a diversion, all this stuff about players' wages.
I think it's living proof that this lockdown has gone on too long if you're watching Toy Story 3, Kieran. I would have been here a long time. If you said to me, what DVD did I watch the other day? I would have been here a long time. And my first question would have been, is the Baroness out for a walk? Now, what the PFA in all this as well, the PFA, as we've discussed, are a hugely wealthy organisation, aren't they?
Yes. There's been focus on Gordon Taylor's pay. So he's now giving £500,000 to the good causes. The PFA itself is giving £1 million to some of the NHS charities. But is this just trying to shame people into doing things? In which case, is it a genuine donation that they're given? There's no logic here. Certainly the PFA, I think from a public relations point of view, has been slow and it's not thought things through. But that doesn't mean that in itself, what it's done is wrong. It is there to protect its members. And I think what it has done is it stood up from its members. I think we're now probably closer to a strike or something of that nature from football players than any time in the history of the Premier League. The reason why the clubs are trying to force through the deals and effectively get the players to sign off on them is as simple as this. We've spoken on many occasions about football players being treated as commodities. And if you take a look at a player's contract, now we are both, as we know, we are both pub lawyers. You know, I just do spreadsheets, but I know a tiny bit about the law. My understanding is that if you fail to play a player for 2 months, his full wage, then the club is in breach of contract and the player can walk away. So therefore, if we take a look at Harry Kane, if Spurs fail to pay him 2 months in a row, his full amount, he could walk away to Manchester United in the summer on a free transfer. And that is why clubs have been focusing on non-playing staff in terms of the furlough, and they've been trying to get the players to agree to the pay cut rather than introduce it unilaterally.
Yeah, so I'm not a pub lawyer like you, Kieran, but a long time ago I was an industrial relations advisor at the London Ambulance Service, and as such I'm struggling to work out what the players would do if they go on strike. This now would not be a good time for players to go on strike. Now listen, there are other football stories. Thankfully, the first one I don't think will come as a surprise to many of us. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I really actively don't like conspiracy theories or the people that spread them. And if you're listening to this and you've tried to set fire to a 5G mast, you're an idiot. But US prosecutors have now very heavily indicated that they think some senior FIFA officials may have taken bribes for the World Cup to end up in Russia and Qatar.
Yes, there was a 70-page litigation paper which came out yesterday. So that occupied me for an hour or two poring over that. And it named about 7 or 8 FIFA officials, many of them are former FIFA officials, in respect of, first of all, the awarding of the Russia and Qatari World Cup rights. It also went back to the 2010 World Cup rights as well for South Africa. The majority of the FIFA officials are in South America, and it involves some great American-style phrases, embezzlement and paybacks and things of this nature. One of the guys involved is Jack Warner of Trinidad. I think if you take a look at historically at the FA's relationship, I don't know whether you remember a few years ago, I think when the Football Association was trying to get Trinidad's support for hosting the 2018 World Cup, England went across to Trinidad to play a friendly. I used to teach in Trinidad, and Jack Warner was a fairly well-known character. I think it's the best way of describing him in those days. And I think his family have other involvements in football, shall we say. So that's come as no surprise. I think the US government has tried for extradition for Jack, but have not got very far because Jack's now involved in local politics. I think it does just show the complete integration of unusual behaviour, especially when it comes to issues such as broadcasting rights and World Cup rights, and the nature of the way that FIFA operates.
Fair play to the Americans. If their reputation has been tarnished by their president recently, but when they sniff out on injustice, they tend to follow it up, don't they? They tend to like to get to the bottom of things, the Americans. It might take some time, but once they're on the case, you kind of think this will be the thing that leads to prosecute, because none of us are surprised by this, as I alluded to. We all, the Qatar one in particular, Russia, I think you can justify because Russia has got a very deep football tradition. The Qatar one, everybody smelt a rat for very many reasons, so no one's particularly surprised to learn that this may be the case.
Yes, but of course, you know, the 2018 World Cup is now history, so that can't be reversed. If you take a look at the Garcia investigation into both Qatar and Russia, Russia said that all of the evidence couldn't be provided to the investigator because they'd rented the laptops that they used to put forward the bid, and they'd gone back to the shop, which I think is so classically Russian. I used to teach in Russia for many years, and it's a country I love hugely, but in terms of a mafia state, it's about as mafioso as you can possibly get.
Well, you've taught in a lot of countries, haven't you?
Yes, yeah, I do get around. Yeah, I used to have a Russian girlfriend who was very, very strange. Without going into too much detail, after what should we all call special cuddles, she used to sing me Russian folk songs, and I was never quite sure how to respond. I didn't know whether she was expecting a bit of Chaz and Dave or a round of applause or me to give her money. I could never quite make her out, but it's an amazing country and an amazing people. But unfortunately, in terms of institutional corruption, it goes throughout the whole of society.
This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by the AI-powered workspace Notion. We are living in an era of information overload, and we have more knowledge than ever before. But what do we do with it all? If you're in Notion, you put that knowledge to work.
It's a workspace designed not just for making progress, but getting inspired. And all I can say on a personal level, as for somebody whose life is quite chaotic, and I'm writing pieces for government and newspapers and media content, I've got my university commitments and I'm supposed to be writing a book, I use Notion all the time because it brings order into chaos.
Well, if you need order brought to your chaos, you can try Notion for free when you go to notion.com/priceoffootball. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/priceoffootball, and start turning your ideas into action. That's notion.com/priceoffootball.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The reason I'm laughing at that for the people at home is that I can actually see Kieran, and the fact that you looked over both shoulders just to check that the Baroness wasn't anywhere near earshot before you told that story is what made me laugh. And then, so once again, the dog's trying to get out again. So the dog's clearly heard that story before as well. Now, on safer ground, while you were watching Toy Story 3 and reminiscing about Russian girlfriends, two clubs released their figures, Reading and Huddersfield. So I'm sure you had a good old pour over those.
Well, yes, I think they're both intriguing for different reasons. If we take a look at Huddersfield, Huddersfield did very well to get promoted in 2017 on a low budget. You know, they recruited very well, and this is what we are seeing from some clubs. They recruited very well in terms of loan signings. You know, Izzy Brown had a fantastic season. Aaron Moy had a fantastic season. I think they had Casey Palmer as well. They had three loan signings, each of whom were on top form that season. On the back of that, they went up, and fair play to them. They survived 2 years in the Premier League. They made a lot of money. And then they were relegated. And what's happened since is that fans have been expecting some of that money, because they made a profit in both years. The fans have been saying, well, OK, why aren't we pitching for promotion in 2019-20? You know, we've seen Stoke come down and buy lots of players. We've seen Villa do it. And whilst Huddersfield's owners aren't as wealthy, and they were still expecting a greater investment in the squad. But it appears that Huddersfield were sold to new owners their relegation. And that's partly due to the fact that the former owner, Dean Hoyle, he's been very ill and he wanted to pass on the club. But it does look, and I don't know whether you've been watching Sunderland Till I Die on Netflix, which is an absolute scream. But in a similar position to what's happened with Sunderland is that when the sale went through, it appears that the parachute payments coming from the Premier League are being used to fund the deal rather than invest in players. So the Huddersfield fans are quite disappointed with that, because you know, Huddersfield aren't having a great season in 2019-20. They had thought that by being relatively prudent in their 2 years in the Premier League, they'd be in a strong position to have a promotion challenge this season, but that's not manifested itself because the money's been used for other purposes.
I suppose the club could argue, though, you use Stoke as an example, and they did spend an awful lot of money, but it didn't work. So there's no guarantee that splashing cash at a problem. It's the hardest division to get out of, and everybody's spending money they haven't got to bring players in to get out of it. So it's that balance again, isn't it, between your financial future and your short-term ambition.
That's right. And sort of neatly segueing into that, we've also got Reading. Their results came out on Saturday, and you're probably thinking to yourself, What did Reading do last season? And they are one of those clubs that they certainly weren't aiming for promotion. They finished 20th in the season, 20th in the division, but they set a new EFL record. And given some of the people involved in the past in the Championship, Reading spent £226 on wages for every £100 worth of income. They racked up losses of around about 40 million from their day-to-day trading. And you think to yourself, well, how on earth did they achieve that? You know, it just seemed insane. There's one thing trying to buy your way to promotion, but trying to buy your way to 20th in the Championship by losing that amount of money, it's the highest relationship between wages and income in the history of the Championship.
I mean, that's doubly interesting. A friend of mine is a Reading season ticket holder, and I was down there a couple of seasons ago for an FA Cup game at Palace when it was sold out, and he sent me a photograph earlier in this season of how it was now, and it's just, I mean, the place was empty, so clearly match day income has plummeted. How do they, I mean, I know the Championship, as you describe it, is a basket case, but that seems astonishing, those figures for a club like Reading.
Yeah, and then we then have to start to look at the owners, because ultimately somebody's writing off on these checks. Now, the owners are a Chinese pair of individuals. They're not necessarily hugely familiar with football, so therefore they're taking advice from other people. If you take a look at Reading, in 2018, they sold the Majeski Stadium to themselves because they needed that to satisfy financial fair play. And in 2019, because of these huge losses, the club's training ground was then sold to another company owned by the owners. Again, this was needed for financial fair play. And Aluko, who was their sort of centre forward, who hadn't exactly ripped up trees, he was loaned to a Chinese club owned by the club owners for £3 million. So we've spoken at length in the past that clubs are engaging in decisions and transactions which look from a business point of view, from a sustainability point of view, as not being in the interests of the club. And once again, it seems that financial fair play is driving all of this.
It's strange as well, Reading, for fans of our generation who remember the old Elm Park, which was a terrible, terrible ground, when you had 4,000 or 5,000 people rattling around inside it. And then due to the generosity of Majeski himself, and then they had Russian owners, so suddenly they're in the archetypal new stadium in the Premier League with a manager that we both know and love, Steve Koppel. And since then, they've become victims of that Premier League success in a way, as so many clubs strive to get in the Premier League, and yet it breaks them.
That's right. It's a classic case of chasing rainbows, and you know there is no pot of gold as we've established on many an occasion, and the excitement of going up for that one season, as it quite often be the case, if you look at the history of clubs who have been promoted, you then come back and what we have seen with Reading is that the new owners, and you've got to give them some credit for spending the money, but ultimately, it's the quality of your decision making that counts in terms of being able to get yourself promoted. And whoever is advising them in terms of recruitment has not done a very good job.
Now, again, this is going to seem like we've planned this, as you mentioned, a pot of gold. And I can reassure people listening at home that we haven't planned anything. I know you'd be disappointed to learn that we do. We don't. You've been analysing the cost of promotion, haven't you?
Yes. So what I've done is over the course of the last decade, I'm just showing Kevin a big spreadsheet here. I've gone through every single club that has been promoted. What we have seen is that the cost of promotion over the last decade has cost the 30 clubs £900 million. You know, almost £1 billion to get up to the Premier League. And what they find is once they're there, they start losing money again. So in terms of the individual clubs, on average, they've spent £131 in wages for every £100 worth of income to get up there. And then when you do get up there, you know, what's the joy of going to Stamford Bridge, getting a stuffing 3 or 4 nil, doing the same at the Etihad, and then celebrating like crazy when you get a 0-0 draw at Burnley?
Well, it's the image of the Premier League, isn't it? It's the genius branding of the Premier League is what it is. It's Sky as well, who just, I suppose if you've grown up, if you're a 25-year-old football fan, you've grown up with nothing but Sky telling you that, yes, the Championship is the second most exciting league in the world, blah, 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 Friday night, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, we're all led to believe, football fans now, that if you're not in the Premier League, you might as well not be playing football. And it's sad for people of our generation because, yeah, you wanted to get promoted, but it wasn't a disaster if you didn't. And clubs, this sounds a terrible Darwinian thing to say, but clubs knew their natural level. If you were a Walsall fan, you loved going to see Walsall play. You didn't expect somebody to come along, a Chinese millionaire, to drag you into the Premier League. And now it seems that everyone's unhappy unless they're in the Premier League. And again, maybe this is something, this current situation is something that might refocus some of our desires and ambitions.
Yes, I mean, one good thing which should come about this is I think we're all realising just how much we miss our clubs and how central it is to our lives. And perhaps in terms of ambition, actually, the aim should simply be to go there, to meet up with those friends, to have those shared experiences that, you know, we're both of the age whereby our shared experiences go back 50 years with the same people. You know, reminding ourselves of it only has to be one. There's only one or two a season, which were absolutely great. And that's what's important. I think football is a great cause for good. I think it's a fantastic social equalising sport as well. And that should be our focus rather than the glitz and the glamour that we've all been seduced by.
I can't tell you. There's going to be a lot of people getting hugs in the Porson's Arms the first time we go back in there. That's when I know this will be over, when I open the door in the Porson's Arms. And I've been dreaming about it. It's terrible. Also, I dream about meeting you, Kieran, obviously. So, and luckily, we're getting to do that twice a week now. So we'll be back on Sunday to record Monday's question special. So if you do have questions for us, it's questions at priceoffootball.com. Price of Football is a Dap Dip production. We hope you're staying well and staying safe. And from Kieran and I, goodbye.
The Price of Football.
Bye-bye, folks.
Price of Football.